Why pay more for a separate CoQ10 supplement? Enjoy twice the benefits with SuperBeats Heart Chews Advanced from the number one doctor, pharmacist, and cardiologist recommended beet brand for heart health support. The new SuperBeats Heart Chews Advanced by Human is now infused with CoQ10. That's essentially like getting CoQ10 for free. Our powerful blend of beetroot, grapeseed extract, and CoQ10 ingredients support nitric oxide production, healthy blood pressure, healthy CoQ10 levels, and heart-healthy energy with two tasty chews a day. Plus, SuperBeats Heart Chews Advance are plant-based, so you get heart-healthy energy without stimulants. For a limited time, get a free 30-day supply of SuperBeats Heart Chews on all bundles and 15% off your first order by going to radiobeats.com and using promo code DEAL. That's radiobeats.com, code DEAL.
These days, work is in trouble. We've outsourced most of our manufacturing to other countries. And with that, we sent away good jobs and our capability to make things. American Giant is a clothing company that's pushing back against this tide. They make all kinds of high-quality clothing and activewear, like sweatshirts, jeans, dresses, jackets, and so much more, right here in the USA. So when you buy American Giant, you create jobs in towns and cities across the country. And jobs bring pride. Purpose. They stitch people together. If all that sounds good to you, visit American-Giant.com and get 20% off your first order when you use code STAPLE20 at checkout. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with promo code STAPLE20.
Doing that, I was face to face with it. It was holding me by my throat, and it felt like it was sucking something out of me.
I probably should have been more scared than I was when I witnessed the exorcism.
I turned and looked on my right side. When I did, there's a beam on the side of the tree, a large beam. It's looking at me and I'm looking at it.
After I hit the lock button and looked back up, I saw red eyes staring back at me.
That they're going to show multiple gods all over the earth, be able to speak in people's languages. And at that point, it kind of converge into this one entity, which will be revealed as extraterrestrial. You'll realize that aliens are the gods of old. And at that point, it'll wipe religion out of the context of humanity.
No way. It couldn't have been a person. I know that. I know that people can't run through the woods like that.
So this thing comes into view, and I see it. It's 50 yards away from me. It's walking. It's walking on two legs. It's huge. This is a big, hairy looking being.
Welcome. I'm your host, and this is Uncomfortable.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the show. I am your host, Eric Szilagyi. This show will be airing January 10th of the new year, and I want to make sure that everyone is aware that we have launched the Uncomfortable Podcast Discord server. It went live on the 1st, and so far, there's been a lot of activity in there. If you're interested in joining the Discord, please find the link in the show notes for this episode. In there, you'll find four rooms at the present. The first one being Base Camp, which is introductions and general conversation. Then we have the Fun House, which is designed for funny memes, jokes, or anything on top, of course, that you think is humorous and you want to share with the members. Please do it there. Then we have the podcast discussion, which is just that. If you have a favorite episode, guest, or topic that you would like to discuss, that's the place for that. Then we have the evidence room, which is where you can post pictures or audio or anything that you feel that might be something of interest to the rest of the members to get their opinions. I want to state, I encourage everyone to please remain respectful. I do not want this to turn into what I've seen some Bigfoot Facebook groups turn into, because quite honestly, many of them are a terrible, toxic, hellish place. Also, Big news from Manscaped, as they will be launching a new line of products for a new body part on January 17th. If you'd like to continue to help support Uncomfortable, get ready to get your orders in and make sure that you use the code UNCOMFORTABLE22 for 20% off and free shipping. Again, that line is debuting on the January 17th episode. If you've had an uncomfortable experience and you'd like to have it featured on the show, please get a hold of me at contact.uncomfortable@gmail.com. Make sure to follow us on Facebook and Instagram, both at Uncomfortable Podcast 65. Most importantly, please share the show with others and make sure you leave us a 5-star rating and review where you can. Those are the main ways that you can help in getting the show out in front of more people. And with that, the more people listening means more great guests like tonight's coming forward with their experiences. I'm excited to get back on track with this topic for tonight's show, and that is the topic of Bigfoot. Not only that, but Bigfoot in my home away from home, the state of Michigan. Tonight's guest comes to me highly recommended by a friend of the show, Mr. Gabe Heiss. Let's get into it. Please give a warm, uncomfortable welcome to Todd Mason. Todd, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Eric, for having me.
Thank you for being with us. Todd, I'm excited to get back to the topic of Bigfoot. I'm no stranger to paranormal or the other strange stuff, but like I said in the opening recently, it seems to have kind of monopolized several of the shows, and quite honestly, it's taken a bit out of me. I don't profess myself as being somebody that has gifts or anything like that, but the number of people that have reached out to me with problems facing them from some darker type experiences seems to have taken a lot out of me. So I'm really excited to get back to Bigfoot, and especially as close to home as you are there in, you're what, just a little east of the Ann Arbor area, if I believe, if I'm looking at the map in my head.
20 minutes east of Ann Arbor.
All right.
Or west of Ann Arbor, west of Ann Arbor.
Yeah. I'm sorry. So you're kind of in the triangle between Lansing, Ann Arbor, and
Yep.
So I wasn't quite sure. We started talking before I hit record, and I wasn't quite sure if you were a researcher or experiencer, and you're an experiencer.
Yes, I sure am. I've been trying to get into some of the research. I've met quite a few people like Gabe, and there's another Linda and Vale. People have really brought me a long way in the Bigfoot community.
All of those names, Val Zavala.
Val.
And who else did you say? Linda?
Linda.
Pomeriki. They were all with me this past September at Bigfoot and Brews. So that was a great afternoon, a lot of fun. So.
Yep. Yeah, so a lot of my experiences started in like 2015. Moved into a house out in Grass Lake, Michigan, and we had eight acres of land, and it's 2 acres of grass, and the rest is all woods, hardwoods, dense woods. And we started having experiences when we moved in. Like I was telling you before you didn't hit the record button, we come home from shopping one day, and there was a dead rabbit on a 30-gallon metal drum. When we came up to the, when we pulled in the driveway, and I picked it up, and there was no blood in it. It was, so they drained the blood out of it and just left it there for a gift, I assumed.
And didn't you say that the head was missing?
Yeah, the head was torn off, and you could tell it was torn off and not cut, because there was the, like ripping a pair of pants, you get jagged edges,
Yeah.
it was definitely ripped off, and all the blood was drained out of it. So that was when our first experience.
How quickly did things kind of start to manifest when you moved in there? I mean, was this something that was an immediate thing, or
pretty much? Yeah, because we were living there. Maybe it was getting cold out, so we moved in May, and so by the fall, that fall when it started getting cold, so October, November, that's when the rabbit was left in the barrel. So, and then that following February is when we had confirmation that they were there, because I went out, we had a burn barrel, so we would separate our garbage, and I would burn my garbage, and I went out to burn, and we had like 4 or 5 inches of snow on the ground, but it was like 35, 40 degrees, so the snow was melting. And I go out to the burn barrel, and there's these footprints there. They're 17, 18 inches long, and there's toe marks in them.
Oh, no kidding.
And there's two sets of them. They were standing around the burn barrel warming their hands, because that's probably from the night before from burning.
No kidding.
And so I called my wife out there, and she's like, I can't walk out there, I don't fall. So I put her on the back of the four-wheeler and drove her over there and showed her. And yeah, so they started showing themselves quite regularly to us, not actually physically seeing them, but mm-hmm. leaving stuff. They started we had this tree that was falling behind the house that they started leaving rocks on it. And that's kind of when I started getting in contact with Vail. I met Vail off of Facebook. Uh-huh. And he suggested not leaving any gifts for them, because when you start gifting, or he was more or less saying more feeding them, if you feed them and you stop it, they get mad, they'll start
right
being destructive. But so I never did offer food. I did offer gems. I built a triangle, about a 6-inch triangle, and I mounted it to a tree, and I put 3 gems on it. That within a week, they took one of the gems and left the other two. They would never touch the other two since I moved out.
Were all 3 of the gems the same color, or did it take a specific color?
One was a tiger eye, one was a green emerald, and the other one I think was like a jasper, and they took the tiger eye and left the other two.
Wonder if there's any significance to that.
Yeah, I don't know. And I even tried to, I had set a trail camera up in the bushes about 20, 30 feet away from it, so I could, you know, hopefully get them on trail camera, but they somehow blocked it and never got them on trail camera. You couldn't tell what, it was just a black picture. So they must've put something over it. Because there was like, you know, there would be a picture of a bird or a squirrel, and then there would just be a black green and nothing. And then, one of my, one of the best experiences we had, I had a, like I said, I got 8 acres. So I have a area that I had cleared out up. I call it up top, cause you got to go up this hill, and it's quite a large hill. And then it levels out. Well, we had, I turned that kind of into my hunting area, but we also would go up there for fires, cause it's kind of really spiritual up there, you know?
Sure.
And we had had, some friends over from church, and we were up there, and one of my sons had come up with us. So there was 5 of us sitting, and we were, my back and my wife's back and my son's back were facing away from the fire. And then the other couple was on the other side of us. So, and we didn't get up there until about 10 PM. And no sooner did we sit down, did acorns start flying in, and it wasn't time for acorns to fall yet. So acorns started falling, and we're, you know, I knew they were there. I could hear them walking. There was 2 of them.
Did anybody else recognize the sounds of the walking, or were you just kind of not wanting to scare anybody?
Well, I had tapped my wife on the leg and told her they're here, and she started listening. And then my son, he heard them, and he got up and left.
Oh, did he really?
Yeah, he went back to the house.
Didn't want any part of it.
Nope. So we're sitting there, and it's about 10 minutes to midnight or so, and the fire's starting to get kind of down, and it's getting dark in the area. And I told the wife I wasn't going to put any more wood on the fire. You know, it probably should go down soon. And 20 seconds after I said that, it had one scream at me.
Oh,
and
no.
It was the loudest, screechiest, but you could tell it was a young, it didn't have the gruffly voice, you know, like the older person or older Sasquatch would have.
Yeah.
You know, you could tell that it was a juvenile. It wasn't older. It was definitely female. It had the female screech.
No kidding. Can you give me an idea? I mean, I can't imagine you could replicate it, but I mean, was it a higher pitched, you know, more like a feminine voice or?
Oh yeah. Yeah. Imagine just a girl with a really good set of lungs screaming at the top of her lungs. And let me tell you, you could feel what I would say the energy coming off of that scream, because it like a shotgun blast.
Yeah,
you know how you feel the wave of the shotgun blast, mm-hmm. kind of like that. It was just so intense and so loud, and she did it for about 30 seconds.
Oh wow!
And we're like, all right, you know. And this was before I knew they were there. But it was before I was really start getting investigating in with them. So I didn't have any recording devices or anything going.
Yeah.
You know, so but now I have recording devices set up whenever I go out.
Do you really?
But
have you been fortunate enough to catch any audio?
No, I haven't. Yeah. No. And I actually just recently moved, but only 2 miles from where I'm at. And there's a family over here. As a matter of fact, I'm now just across the lake from where Val had his sighting.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah. So they're over here too, but it's a different, I call them clans or family units.
Right.
It's a different family unit over here than the family unit over there.
Wow. That's so coincidental that would have been the same area that Val had his.
Yeah. Yep.
Yep.
Val was the first one that I had ever talked to who had actually seen one that was that was suspended in a tree.
Yeah. Yeah, that was really cool. My daughter, we had my daughter, my son, my wife's daughter, and her husband living with us, and we had 4 dogs. And she had taken Buddy out, and Buddy is a pit bull, mm-hmm. and she was taking him outside, and she was, you know, texting her on Facebook or something on her phone when she was outside. And we had a 2-car garage with a carport on it, and at the time there was nothing underneath the carport. And she said Buddy started barking behind her. She was facing away from the carport, but she was standing basically right in front of it, but she was facing away from it. And the dog started barking at her, and she's like, "Why are you barking at me?" So she turned around, and there was one underneath the carport.
She saw it and
it was kneeled down like a football player kneeling down, one leg up and one leg down. And she said his head was still touching the top of the carport.
Holy cow. What were the light conditions when she saw it?
It was, you know, 10 o'clock at night, so it was dark.
Okay. So there was no light was falling on it. She didn't get any kind of detail as far as color of hair or anything like that.
She turned her flashlight on her phone, and she said it was a brownish hair. And she pretty much went into shock. She said she came in the house and we were all, there was me and my wife, and I think we had some friends over or something, and she collapsed on the floor in the kitchen.
Oh, wow.
She wouldn't leave the house for 3 days. And then even still after living there, she wouldn't go outside at night anymore.
So it was a terrifying experience
for her.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that's most people's response to something that we can't process and don't know,
sure. Yeah.
You know, is fear.
Well, every once in a while you get the one-offs that were like, oh my God, I just stood there in awe and I couldn't believe. And I was so happy that, you know, God let me see this thing and it's in all of its yeah. beauty. And it's like, I've been filling my pants. I know I would, you know, at least the first time that it happens, but,
yeah.
So, you know, like the proximity, how close was she? I assume she'd had been pretty close if the light from her phone.
Less than 10 feet.
Oh my word.
She said it didn't smell. It had no smell to, no bad smell to it, she said.
You know, that seems to be such a recognizable trait that a lot of people talk about. But when you start diving into it, it seems to be a lot less than what people actually think. That smell is not as prevalent all the time.
Yeah.
At least what I've found as far as talking to people. And that makes me wonder if that's something that's actually a stank of a body odor, or do they have a control over it? Is that a,
yeah,
you know, is that a scent gland? Is that something that, they can just release, you know? I don't know. It's a strange thing.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause even when I had that experience up top with the two and then the one screamed at us, we wouldn't have known they were there unless they were walking around moving. We didn't smell them. But here's another thing too, is I have, two dogs. I mentioned I had four, but two of them are mine and one's a beagle.
Okay.
And they get along famously great.
With the Bigfoot?
Yeah.
Really?
we had chickens, you know, at any given time, most of the time we had about 20 chickens.
Yeah.
Give or take a few because of the foxes and the coyotes. Cause we let them free range. And, they never killed our chickens. But we'd, you know, go out and lock them up at night. Usually when it would got dark, their, you know, light would be on in the coop and they'd go in and we'd go out and lock them up. So there was this one night and I heard a real slight whistle. And my dog heard it and he was like, boom, he ran right up in the woods. And he wouldn't come down for nothing. And he was up there for a good 10, 15 minutes, and then he finally came down.
No barking, no distress.
Nope. And you know a beagle.
Yeah.
If a beagle doesn't like something, they're going to bay at it. They're going to bark at it. Nope. And he did come down. When he came down, he did have a little bit of an odor to him.
Oh, really?
But that doesn't say that he didn't roll in a pile of shit while he was up there, too, because
yeah.
Dogs are known to do that, you know.
Sure.
But there's this pizza place over in Munith, Michigan, which isn't too far from here, where I live. And they had a cement Bigfoot statue in front of their building. Mm-hmm. So a lot of times they have a long wait for delivery. So I would just go pick it up and I'd, you know, take the dogs for a ride and they were busy. So I had to park over in front of the Bigfoot and man, you should have seen, I wish I would have videotaped it. The excitement and the pleasure that he had when he seen that Bigfoot was just amazing.
No kidding.
Yeah, it was just, I was shocked at how excited he was to see that. And he, when he gets excited, he does this little bark and wolf type, like a little kind of a bark wolf bay thing at the same time.
Yeah.
And he started doing that. He was so excited to see that thing.
He recognized it.
Oh, yeah.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah. And, you know, you hear, I have listened to stories, you know, YouTube stories, and you hear where, you know, like this old lady was living with, she had two big dogs and they were barking all the time, and she went out in the morning and they were dead.
Yeah. Primarily when you hear about dogs encountering these things, it never really is a good outcome for the dogs.
And, no.
You know, here's my thing with listening to, oh my God, I can't even imagine how many hours of Bigfoot eyewitnesses on different podcasts and documentaries and stuff like that I've logged in the years that I've been interested in this, which has been my mm-hmm. whole life. It's got to be like astronomical if I could have those hours back. But, you know, it's funny because you have people that you talk to that are much like yourself who, your daughter had a terrifying experience, you know, scared the hell out of her. You haven't really been that terrified of it. It's just been odd, weird, unusual. Yeah. But then you hear these other people that, like I referenced earlier, you know, they think it's this, like almost spiritual experience that, you know, they got to see something that very few people can, or are extremely thankful for being able to do it. And mm-hmm. then you hear the ones that are just absolutely terrifying, you know, like they were written by a horror movie, And I don't, you know, are there that vast different types of experiences? Are some of them making it up? You know, I'm sure there's some people making it up. Not all the stories are real, but I think a large percentage of the stories are real, especially mm-hmm. the ones that don't want their real names out. They don't want to, they're not trying to make a dollar off of it. They're just like what I told you earlier before we started recording. The family that is in episode 2 and 3 from opening day, they just wanted to talk about it and be able to talk about it in a safe environment where somebody wasn't going to pick apart every piece of their story, roll their eyes at them, tell them they were nuts, you know?
Yeah. Here's one thing I do. I have probably about 5 or 6, maybe 7 Bigfoot t-shirts now. Uh-huh. And I try to wear them when I go out in public, and I try to make sure that people see them.
I do the same thing.
And I can't tell you how many people have said, "Hey, I like your t-shirt." And I go, "Hey, do you believe in them?" And I start a conversation with them about it, you know, because I try to make people aware that they're real. They're here. They're not here to hurt us. You know, they've coincided with us for how many hundreds of thousands of years, probably.
Yeah, it sure seems like they've been around. I mean, you know, I always go back to the Native American, the First Nations,
the Native Americans over in Europe. They have them in the caves.
Yeah. You know, so it's not something new. It's not something that just started, you know, with the advent of the Patterson-Gimlin film. I don't believe they were dropped off by UFOs. I don't think they're the alien watchdogs or anything like that. You know, there is some aspect of the woo that really does grab my attention. And I think to some extent there is something to what people consider to be the woo. But I don't know what that is. And I don't know enough about it. And it's too hard to talk about. And you sound goofy as hell, you know, trying to make sense of it. So I tend to stay away from talking about it too much, mm-hmm. but it is something that really interests me. And I got a feeling a lot of it is just their natural ability and us not being able to understand what they can do. I don't know that it's necessarily a supernatural aspect to it. I think if you, you know, I've said this before on other shows, we have been so conditioned and so stripped of what we probably had as far as natural senses, you know, thousands of years ago, because we've had walls and windows and doors and roofs around us for so long now that we don't have to worry about what it's like to sleep by a fire and keep one eye open to make sure that, you know, predators aren't coming into our camp and, you know, making off with our children. So I think we've done it to ourselves with how we decided to civilize ourselves, you know. So I think, you know, had we stayed on the same path of evolution and kind of forewent the modernization of humanity, I think we probably would have very similar capabilities, and our senses would be much more heightened. And I think there's still some people nowadays that actually have the remnants of those abilities, you know?
Oh yeah, I agree. Yeah.
Interesting stuff. So what other kind of things? So you said the property that you had your first group of experiences on, you left that, but you moved only a couple of miles away. There's another family unit in that area. And what kind of stuff are you experiencing with that group?
Same thing actually happened in the, at both places with there. We both had pear trees. And the first place on that I lived, the ironic thing about it was it's going back to the trail camera. I have a trail camera. It's made by Wild Game Innovations.
Okay.
It's called the Wild Game Innovation 360. So it's supposed to take a picture 300. It's got one little blind spot. So, but it can take a picture all the way around. So I set that trail. The pear tree at the first property, the lowest branch with a pear on it was about 8 or 9 feet off the ground. So there's no way a deer could get the pears off of the trees. So one day I go out by the pear tree, and I tell you, half of the pear trees on the tree are gone from the bottom to the top, just half of them. So I went and got my trail camera that I always had up top by my hunting area, and I put it down here by the pear tree. And I guess I thought I had it pointed good, but every time it would take a picture. I had two apple trees and a pear tree. It would take a picture by the apple trees. It would take a picture on the other side of the pear tree. But every time the pears were gone the next morning, and there was no pictures taken of where the pear tree was at. How they managed it, I don't know. But I've heard a few people say that they have what's the right word, I guess, ultrasonic abilities.
Okay.
To push out an ultrasonic vibration or something like that. So if they could do that, they have the ability to stunt a camera from working.
Yeah. Yeah. But, I don't understand the inability of trail cams. You know, something that does make sense to me is there are some animals in our natural world that can see in the infrared and ultraviolet.
Deer see in ultraviolet.
You know, so these trail cams use infrared.
Yep. And so deer can see that.
You know, there's tons of pictures of deer staring right at the camera, you know?
Oh yeah.
So if
I've even got pictures of them walking so close that their eyeballs right up next to the camera.
Yeah.
because you're looking at it.
So if they recognize, if they're able to recognize the infrared spectrum and can see the light coming off of it, you know, and somebody made the comment to me, it's like, if I came into your house and I took a small picture about the size of a, you know, a good size phone, and I hung it in your house, how long do you think it would take for you to recognize that that didn't belong there? And, you know, well, you know, you see your stuff every day and you would pick that out rather quickly.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, essentially when you're out in the woods, you're in their home, you know, especially if you're in the area that they're residing in, you know, so they may be able to pick those out very quickly just by recognizing that it wasn't there before and it doesn't belong there. Then you have the different smells, you know, which could either be the human scent that's on them, the plastics that they're made out of, the sound of the sound of the
camera,
the internal components of it, you know, possibly the discharge of energy from the battery when the pictures are being taken. You know, there's a number of things that could possibly be alerting them to the presence of these things. And, you know, I can't wrap my head around the fact that they would have any knowledge of what it is, you know, that it's actually taking an image of them. I can't imagine that that is something that they're aware of. You know, that just seems unreasonable. But why they avoid them so much, I don't know. You know, maybe it is strictly on the idea of the light that's generated by them. You know, maybe that's enough of a deterrent for them, because, you know, I've talked to other people that, you know, the gentleman that was in my episode 2 and 3 put security cameras all the way around his house, and I believe lighting as well, and the activity around there has stopped. I've talked to other people who have put up lights and cameras, and it seems to stall or at least retard the amount of activity that they're having on the properties. And it makes me wonder if it is something to do with wanting to remain out of that light. You know, they may not recognize that if their vision is truly picking up on infrared light, they may not realize that it's not casting an actual light. They see it as a bright object, so they may think that if they walk into it, it's going to illuminate them. But it in all actuality, it's only illuminating it for the photograph to be taken. It's not creating actual light. So I don't know, that's the only thing that really kind of makes much sense to me. All the rest of it is kind of like, how would they be aware of what this thing does to avoid having a picture taken of them? Unless they're, you know, getting back to the woo stuff again, unless they're way more intelligent than what we know. But I kind of, I'm not taking away from the fact that they're very intelligent creatures, but I just don't think it's that.
Support for Uncomfortable is brought to you by Manscaped. Who is the best in men's below-the-waist grooming? Their products are precision-engineered tools for those sensitive areas. Manscaped's Performance Package, the ultimate men's hygiene bundle. Join over 6 million men worldwide who trust Manscaped with this exclusive offer for you. 20% off and free worldwide shipping with the code UNCOMFORTABLE22 at manscaped.com. As I've said previously, I started using Manscaped products about 3 years ago with the Lawnmower 2.0. So with the delivery of the Performance Package 4.0, it has been a welcomed upgrade. Inside this package, you'll find their Lawnmower 4.0 trimmer, Weed Whacker ear and nose hair trimmer, Crop Preserver ball deodorant, Crop Reviver toner, Performance boxer briefs, and a travel bag to hold your goodies. First off, the Lawnmower 4.0, this trimmer is the future of men's personal grooming. Their fourth generation trimmer features cutting edge ceramic blades to reduce grooming accidents thanks to their skin safe technology. The Lawnmower 4.0 is waterproof and also has an LED light for those dark and scary areas. Because this trimmer is waterproof, you can say goodbye to the mess on the bathroom floor. And let's say you want to take your grooming game to the next level, the Performance Package 4.0 also includes the Weed Whacker nose and ear hair trimmer. The Weed Whacker is also waterproof and provides proprietary skin-safe technology, which helps reduce nicks, snags, and tugs in those delicate ear and nose holes. Their Crop Preserver Ball Deodorant and Crop Reviver Ball Toner will change the way you approach your hygiene routine. Trust me when I say, fellas, your balls will thank you. Manscaped even threw in two free gifts to their Performance Package 4.0, the Manscaped Boxers and the Shed Travel Bag. It's time to take care of yourself, so go to manscaped.com and get 20% off plus free shipping with the code UNCOMFORTABLE22. That's 20% off with free shipping at manscaped.com and use the code UNCOMFORTABLE22. Unlock your confidence and always use the right tools for the job with Manscaped.
So what other kind of stuff you get?
So at the other house, one time me and my wife, we take the dogs out over by the pear tree, and it was a hill valley type thing. And, you know, we'd throw the frisbees for them with them and stuff. And we're sitting on the side of the hill and talking and stuff. And all of a sudden, out of the corner of my eye, I see this big black object flying through the air. And then it broke off a branch on a piece of a tree. And then it landed on the ground, and it had a good sized thud. It was a rock, and it was bigger than a softball.
Oh, no kidding.
And it was probably a good 25, 30 yards away from me where it landed. So it wasn't like they were throwing it at us there. I think they were just trying to tell us they were there.
Yeah. The rock throwing thing, that's a concerning trait. You know, I mean,
I've heard bad things, and I've only heard bad things about it.
Well, you know,
rock. Oh, go ahead.
I just talked to a gentleman down from Southern Indiana fairly recently, and he does a lot of catfishing on a river that's like right between the end of Indiana and beginning of Kentucky. And, you know, he had stones, for the most part, stones and pebbles being rained down on them during a night of catfishing with him and his buddy. And then, you know, some very large splooshes, from much larger rocks as well. But he's like, you know, where we were at and how close they were coming to us. He's like, but we never got hit, you know? So yeah. there's something to, you know, they must be incredibly accurate. And, you know, you think, well, how could something be that accurate that it's, you know, well, if they use stones as a weapon, you know, in hunting or, you know, taking out small game like squirrel or, you know, possum or anything like that, if that's one of your main modes of taking out a food source, you may be getting pretty accurate with it. You know,
yep.
You know, so yeah, that's crazy. How close were these rocks coming to you?
Like I said, they're about 20 yards away from us. So it was only the one. It was only just one big one, like I said, and so we got up and we were going into the house, and we stopped. I had a wood project that going on in the garage, so I was talking to my wife about it, and then we started to go into the house, and between the garage and the house is about 20 feet. And just as I hit the corner of the garage, another rock come flying across and landed right next to me. It was only about the size of a, you know, just a small rock, just a little bit bigger than a quarter. So we sat there and talked to him for a minute. I never got any vocalizations back or anything, but, you know, I never felt any danger or anything.
Can I ask, what's that conversation like? What are you saying?
Well, just say, hi, how are you? You know, do you ever want to come out and meet us and spend some time with us, or what can we do to help you out? Anything, you know, we just try to talk nice and calm with them.
How's your wife react with all this?
Oh, she knows you're there. She's okay with it. So, go ahead.
It's just the polar opposites of, you know, how you guys respond versus how other people that I've talked to and have heard.
Oh, really?
You know, it's just a different, you guys must be having a getting a different vibe, you know, from.
We got nothing but friendly vibes from them, you know. I mean, other than being screamed at us, they never threw rocks at the house or hit the house. One time, it was about midnight. I was sitting in my chair in the living room, and the wife was sleeping in the chair, and something started pounding on the door, and it hit the door hard enough where the door popped open.
Oh, wow.
So, and then when I went outside, my beagle's hair was standing up like a razor. You know how some dogs, their hair will go up?
Yeah.
Well, that was the only time that we ever felt any not happy vibes, I guess you could say.
So, like,
there was a time I had a raccoon that was getting in my chicken coop and killing my chickens, so I killed it. Well, I didn't want my dogs to try to tear it up, so I took it up and I threw it on the far side of my property, which is an old rock quarry, right?
Yeah.
And the hill probably about 60 feet down. Well, I went up hunting one night, and I had built the treehouse. It's 12 by 14 platform. And as I was coming in, and I'm walking on my path, and you know it was dark, and I had my headlight on, and I tend to walk with my head down, but I just happened to pick my head up, and I seen something white in this little tree right next to the path. It was the entire skeleton of a raccoon.
There was no
meat on the bones or anything.
Was it bleached like it may have been there from a season before, or you're thinking?
No, it couldn't have been there from. I would have seen it.
Oh, okay.
When that year when I was hunting, I hunted just about every day because I'm disabled. I don't work, so I would have seen it. So they got it. They put it up there between the time I went up there and started hunting and came down. Yeah. They snuck it in that tree, and it was probably about 40 yards away from where I was sitting.
You know, it's funny you bring up the, going back just a little bit, bringing up the, pounding on the door. My son and a lady friend had rented a Airbnb cabin in the Manistee Forest, about a year ago, pretty close to, I think it might have been mid-November a year ago. And they had a number of things going on throughout the night, the first night that they were there. This was very close to Tippy Dam.
I used to fish up there.
Yeah, so she's looking out the window. She's seeing eye shine from across all the property, the road that is in front of them, and then into the property on the other side of the road. She's seeing eye shine. They're having some weirdness with the porch light. Keeps coming on and off by itself. My son calls me, and I'm like, this obviously it's a motion detector. It wasn't a motion detector light. Every time the light would come on, my phone call with my son would get really robotic sounding and tinny, and then we'd drop the call. And then it'd be a few minutes and he'd call me back, and then the light was out and we could talk for a while, and then he's like, oh shit, the light's on again. And then his voice would get real tinny and robotic sounding, and then we'd lose a call. We did this for hours. His first phone call to me was like at 8:30, and it went on till midnight. And he's just like, screw it, we're going to bed. You know, we locked everything up. But the next morning at like 6 in the morning, they're upstairs in the loft. It was a small A-frame. They're upstairs in the loft sleeping, and something's banging on the front door. So my son comes down the steps, goes to the front door, nothing. And there was no snow yet. I don't even think we had had a hard frost yet. So, he's looking, and there's nothing. And he goes back up the steps, gets back up into the loft, sits down on the bed, and starts banging on the door again. Only this time it's on the back door of the A-frame. And no idea. But there was a logbook in the A-frame from like other previous guests who would just write, we were here at such and such dates and they had a great time, love the place, whatever, blah, blah, blah. In June or July, a couple had left a message in there that said, Bigfoot made its presence known to us. We didn't get to see it, but it was very apparent he was here. And it was like, oh, no, holy crap. they took a picture with the phone and sent me the page out of it, the excerpt.
That's cool.
And then they went back even further. In a couple of months before that, there were people that had left a paragraph in there about being at the lake and seeing several lights that were dancing above the water. So,
oh, wow.
I don't know if that was in reference to the lights that people see when they say, Bigfoot's around, or if they were like UFOs. But yeah, interesting stuff. But the banging on the door is like, scared the hell out of my son and the girl,
Oh yeah.
And then especially to go out there and, not see anything really out of place. The night before, the first night they got there, they both had dogs. Both of them on the smaller side. And I think my son's is probably like around 50, 55 pounds, and hers is even smaller than that. But he said something hit the side of the A-frame and the dogs went ballistic and the whole side of the A-frame shook.
Wow.
And he was like, that's enough. He's like, I'm pretty much done and shutting down right now. Cause the next day they went outside in the daylight, looked to see if they could see any kind of like large rock or anything, or a big limb from a tree or something that may have fallen on it. And there was nothing. So.
Yeah. And he pounded on the house.
He actually had taken the dogs out to go to the bathroom, and he went to the backside. He said he forced himself to go to the backside behind the A-frame up along the edge of the wood line. And he said, while he was standing there, he saw something, kind of red reflecting out of the, deeper into the woods. And, he's like, nope, took the dogs back inside. The next day he went out. The next day he went out and walked back there and found that it was a really old fairing off of a snowmobile, and it was a reflector plate. So while he was, he's like, yeah.
Yeah. So we kind of had the same thing happen. We happened to a pear tree down here. I've been cutting the grass all summer or fall here, cause we didn't move here until September. And, one day the pear trees were there and the next they were gone. And this pear tree here is three times the size as my pear tree. And there was no pears on the ground, no pears in the tree, just gone.
Yeah. Somebody's poaching your pears.
Yep.
That's a lot of fruit though, isn't it? I mean,
oh yeah. They
had been working on that for quite some time.
Yeah. Yeah. And my mother-in-law here, she's this house. Her husband and his dad built this house in 71. So they've lived here all, since 71. And, she goes out on the back porch patio or whatever and prays at night. And she's she's been out there plenty of times hearing screams from across the lake.
Yeah. What's their reaction to that? I mean, are they scared by it? Are they just like, it's a part of living here and this is natural?
Yeah. I guess she's grown accustomed to it. You know, she'll tell me, you know, like she'll tell me when they screamed and I said, oh, that's cool. Sometimes I should remember to put a recording out there, a recorder.
What about prints? Are you finding footprints on a fairly consistent basis?
The ground at my house, my old house, was relatively hard. The one time we had prints in the ground and not snow was in 2020. My mom had passed away and I had flown out to Arizona to drive home with my dad from Arizona. And when I was out there, my son and daughter were walking my path. I put a path all the way around the property. They were on the bottom side over by the back corner of the property, and there was a set of tracks in it. So my son looked up how to make plaster of Paris. Mm-hmm. So, but what he did wrong was he didn't build a frame around it. So when he put it down, it was on a little bit of an incline and it leaked down.
Oh.
So he said he left it there overnight. Well, during sometime that night or, you know, during whatever, I've got knuckle prints in the ground, three knuckle prints, two different prints. And what they did was they flicked all the casting away with their finger.
Did they really?
Yeah.
I wonder.
So that was kind of,
that's weird.
That was kind of cool.
I wonder why they would have done that. Just recognizing it as something that shouldn't have been there.
Yeah, probably. Yeah. They knew they had walked in that area and they probably walked back in that same area. And I had even gone as far as on part of that path, I had bought some play sand and I put play sand down so that I could see whatever was going through there. And they would never make it through that spot. You know,
they always
seem to avoid that area.
Oh, and I wish you would have been able to pour cast of the knuckle prints as well.
Yeah. But the ground was so hard there. It was really no indentation in the ground. It was just kind of the soft layer of the dirt was moved around. So you could tell it was a knuckle print.
Wow. So what do you make as far as, what do you think the number in this tribe or clan, how many do you think it consists of?
I think it's a mom and a dad and a daughter. I think it's the three of them.
Have you ever, I had an episode with a gentleman who was from, I want to say it was Lower Jackson County.
Okay.
Which is probably south of you, right?
Yeah.
And there were two really interesting things that he said. One was, is the Kalamazoo River run through that way?
Down that way, yeah.
Yeah, I think his property was on the Kalamazoo. And he said there was a small stream that would come off of it and go through his property. And he would, during the summertime, there would be an inordinate amount of wild garlic that would grow.
Oh yeah.
And when he would go and he would cut the grass, the couple of times a season, just to knock down all the tall weeds. And he said when he would cut down that wild garlic, he would notice that, like, over the next day or two, all that wild garlic had been picked up and taken off.
Oh wow.
And I thought that was really interesting. And I've heard a very few other instances where people have brought up their like of garlic. And
well, they probably know it's good for them.
Probably, yeah. You know, if they're well, you look at the First Nation tribes, Native Americans. You know, they're aware of, you know, or I don't know about nowadays, but you know, back in the old days, they knew the natural remedies for things.
Yeah.
But the other thing he said was in relation to talking about, you know, how their tracks always seem to be almost in a perfect straight line, you know, not straddling like ours is, but almost in a straight line. And this is the first time I had ever heard that. And it made so much sense. He said, I've seen young adults, you know, but always the adults are on the ground. He said, I think the young ones for a good while are always in the trees, completely arboreal. And he said, if you're walking on branches, essentially walking a tightrope or, you know, a balance beam for the first several years of your life, and muscle memory, when you get down and you're walking on the ground, would not it make sense that you would continue to walk one foot in front of the other, you know, in a straight line, just like you've learned over the last several years growing up?
Yep, exactly.
Has there ever been any, and I guess I bring that up because I'm curious with you, has there ever been, have you noticed anything that would lead you to believe that they're spending time in the trees? You know, I mean, we go back to Val's experience, and his was apparently a full grown adult, judging from the picture, you know, and it was in a tree. It was hanging off the side of a trunk, but it was in a tree. Is there anything that you've ever noticed that would lead you to believe that they're doing the same thing there?
Yeah, because like with them putting that raccoon skeleton where they put it, mm-hmm. I would have heard them walking because they were only 40 yards away and it was covered in, you know, in leaves and stuff. Yeah. The only areas that were clear was the path. But in order to get into that area, they would have had they wouldn't have been able to been on the path to where they put the skeleton. So, and there's plenty of pine tree. I mean, there was a crap ton of pine trees and maple trees and oak trees up there that, if they can maneuver through a tree like rather easily, then yeah, I would believe that because I never heard them, you know? And like I said, when they were walking in the woods, when we had the church people friends over, you heard them walking. You heard two sets of footprints walking and they were farther away from us there than that would have been from me with the skeleton, you know?
You know, when you think about, you know, chimpanzees in the trees, you know, and smaller primates, you know, they swing, they jump, they, you know, they're doing all kinds of stuff. It's really graceful and, you know, they're completely at home in the trees. And when you think about, you know, a juvenile, I guess you'd go anywhere from a baby to a toddler, if they are in the trees, it would make sense that they could move around pretty easily. But,
oh, yeah.
But when I saw Val's picture, you know, and the size of that, and when you...
Yeah, that was a big one.
And when you start hearing the descriptions from other people who lay eyes on these things about their enormous size, you know, mm-hmm. even your daughter's depiction of, you know, what she saw kneeling down and still head scraping the top of the carport.
Yeah.
You know, imagine the weight and the...
That they have, yeah.
And the size for them to be able to maneuver in the trees is confounding to me.
If you think about it, granted, we're, you know, 98% like a chimpanzee, but they have a different muscular system than we do, which makes them like 5 to 10 times stronger than us.
Yeah, I think you could probably even increase that a little bit more.
So if they have that much strength, and if the Sasquatch is a, you know, cross between us and them, then I could imagine they've got quite a bit of strength.
Yeah. What do you think they are?
I think they're an off species of hominids of us.
Just something that, you know, evolved in a parallel to us.
Pretty much. Yeah. And for some unknown reason, they've been able to hide their skeletons rather well and everything else they do, you know, but just like a bear, do you ever find a bear skeleton in the woods or a cougar skeleton?
Right.
You know, you never.
Those arguments are made all the time. It's like, oh, isn't there ever been? Well, you know, I hunted for a while. I didn't hunt my whole life, but I hunted for a while and I spent a decent amount of time in the woods. I never found any bones of anything. I was trying to find antlers, you know, after they'd shed them, and I've never found any of those, you know, and now I've got
antlers get eaten by the animals.
Yeah.
So why wouldn't bones?
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah. You know, I left a pair of antlers in my garage, you know, for the rattling antlers.
Yeah.
They're real antlers, you know, and over the winter, the mice had chewed them down.
Oh, did they really?
Yeah. The mice and the, I know we don't have porcupines down in this area, but up north, the porcupines are prevalent. They'll eat the bones.
Hmm. What about structures? Have you on either one of your properties, have you ever found anything that was?
Well, we had this one spot where there was a tree that had probably 3 Ys in it. And each set of the Ys had two trees in it that were stripped of all their side branches. And they're, you know, they're 30, 40 feet long. So they were like a triangle. And then there was a small maple next to it. And this didn't happen until about a year or two before we left. So probably about 2020, where they put 3 little small tree saplings or whatever into that little maple tree. What it symbolized, I have no idea. But some of the other things that they did were where I put my platform up for hunting, about 10 yards behind it, there's a maple tree about 6 or 7 inches in diameter, about 8 or 9 feet up. It was snapped off. And just, you know, the top part of the tree, you know, just fell to the ground.
Yeah.
But you could see it was snapped. There was no swaying in the wind, and then it broke, because usually when that happens, you get large, long splinters going up the tree, you know?
Yeah.
This was just snapped. And you know how, you know, maple trees are hard wood.
Yeah.
So it takes, you know, quite a bit of strength to be able to do something like that.
You know, for a long time, I've always thought, you know, that that theory that they physically break those trees for whatever purpose, as a you know, as some sort of a signpost, you know.
Yeah,
but I wonder, you know, like when you start getting to those bigger diameters of trees, you know, that seems like that would take a ridiculous amount of strength to do that, you know. But then I start thinking, it's like, what if those bigger trees, what if they're actually using those to travel? And they're the weight that I was talking about, you know, they're adult size. I wonder if every once in a while they pick a tree and it buckles under the.
Yeah. But like I said, try doing this when you go out in the woods next time, sometime. If you break a tree, especially a live tree, it's not going to break straight across. It's going to be, you're going to have splinters all right, up and down in there. It's not going to break evenly.
Yeah.
And if, like you're saying, if you put 900 pounds up in a tree it's going to splinter when it comes down. This was just snapped.
Yeah.
And I've seen that quite a bit since I've been out searching. And on the other side of the lake where Val had his sighting, there's maybe three or four maple trees over there that are like that. And that's a very well-known area for people to see them is right over there.
And, you know, if it was snow load, if it was, high winds, come down in a storm, but these trees have a lot of other trees around them, right?
Exactly.
You know, so why wouldn't that snow load do something to the surrounding
trees? Yeah.
It's interesting stuff, man. It's just, you know, you talk to people. I talk to people, a lot of people, and, you know, you have nothing to gain by this.
By saying
this stuff. I mean, it's not, you know, and why would people talk about it? Why would they decide to, I'm going to tell people I saw Bigfoot or I've had a Bigfoot experiences. I mean, you didn't reach out to me to be on my podcast. I literally went to somebody who is knowledgeable in the field of Bigfoot in the state of Michigan, looking for some legitimate people to talk to.
Me and my wife are both very easygoing. I'm open about it. I'm not afraid to talk about it. You know, it happened. Stuff has happened, and I hope more stuff happens. I hope I see one. I hope I meet some.
Have you ever considered having, and I'm not suggesting that you do, but just out of curiosity, have you ever considered having people come to your property and do, you know, like proper investigations?
I've had Gabe and Linda out, and this last summer, when we were there, I think we got some screams off in the distance, but we couldn't tell if they were coyote or whatever they were.
Yeah.
I've had Val and I think the other guy's name was Ernie that came out and investigated. They never found it really anything, you know, other what I have shown them and stuff. So that's about it. You know, when COVID hit, I was supposed to have this guy named Bob Daigle was supposed to come out and he never made it out because he was older and he was afraid of the COVID.
Yeah.
So.
And I don't know that I would suggest that it's something people should do. I mean, if whoever's listening, if you're having experiences, you know, I've talked to people that, you know, seem to think or have experienced that some negative reactions to having people come out onto the property, you know, they tend to get used to you and they tolerate and pretty much concede to share that property with you. But if you have other people that are coming out that they don't recognize, they don't know the scent and, you know, they're out monkeying around in, that's a bad term, but
That's why we thought
their environment.
That's why we thought we got screamed at that one night, because we had a couple of people that had never been there before.
Yeah.
And so that's what me and my wife were talking about, is maybe they screamed because we had them out here.
Now, while you guys were sitting at the fire and you recognized that you had movement around the campfire and then eventually got screamed at, that other couple that was with you, what was their perception of what was going on?
Oh, it was actually kind of funny because they were a bit oblivious that they were there, because it was during the election with Trump and Biden.
Yeah.
And he was for Trump and she was for Biden. So they're sitting there arguing about it and they're walking around throwing acorns or landing. Acorns hit us. You know, they were throwing acorns at us all night and they were just oblivious to it. And that's, like I said, that's why my son got up and he went down back to the house because he was tired of getting acorns hit him. And they were just oblivious to it. But once they screamed, they're like, okay, we can go now.
Oh, that was it for him, huh?
Yeah, yeah. It was kind of funny. We just grabbed our chairs and left. Actually, I think I left mine and my wife's chair up at the fire pit.
Anything else worth mentioning?
I think that's mostly it. I'm sure I probably forgot a couple things, but, you know.
Well, I really appreciate you taking the time to do this with me.
Yeah, no problem.
It was a good conversation, and it's just, you know, having, you know, I explained before we started recording, I've lived in, you know, southern Michigan and very, very northern Indiana my entire life. And, mm-hmm. you know, this has been a huge topic of interest for me for a long, long time. And to, you know, in the last 7-8 years, to realize the vast number of people who have experienced and seen these things in this part of the state, it's strange, because, you know, I mean, I think many of us at one point in our life, you know, thought these things, if they are real, they're relegated to the Pacific Northwest or, you know, down in Florida in the Everglades. But to come to the realization that these things are throughout, you know, literally every state in the U.S.
I just seen a map of where all the sightings were in the U.S. and Canada. Uh-huh. And it just seems like the plains out west are the only places they don't live.
I know. Isn't that strange?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's strange. All right, sir. I really appreciate you taking the time to do this. It was fun talking with you. And please keep me in mind if you have any new good experiences.
Please, sure will.
I'd like you to let me know.
Yep.
All right, sir. Thank you.
You're welcome.
All right, guys, that's it for this week's show. I really hope you enjoyed tonight's experiences with Todd Mason. If you did, don't forget to leave us a 5-star rating and review wherever you can, and share the show. Share it with your friends, share it with your family, share it with coworkers. The more listeners make for more experiencers. And if you've had an experience or have a story that you'd like to have shared on Uncomfortable, please reach out to me at contact.uncomfortable@gmail.com or message me on Instagram or Facebook, both at Uncomfortable65. Until next time, my friends, stay uncomfortable.